We don't have this song in our songbook, but we do have the overhead. This will allow everybody to simply look up and watch me out of the bottom of your eye, to the corner. We can all sing together. We sang this last week, but want to sing it again this week.
Make me a servant just like your son. For he was a servant. Please make me one. Make me a servant. Do what you must do to make me a servant. Make me like you. Make me a servant. Take all my pride, for I would be lowly, humble inside, giving to others with all that I do, in love for my brother. Make me like you. Make me a servant filled by your might, and may all my labors shine with your light. Show me your footsteps and what I should do, for now and forever, make me like you.
Since I have learned that song, that has been one of my favorite songs to just go around the house and to sing while I'm driving my car. It's a beautiful song, just the harmony and the melody. But even more important than the harmony and the melody is the message that it gives. In 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 9, Paul talked about those in Thessalonica that had turned their hearts away from idols, and they had turned to God. But he said in that turning, they had turned to serve the living God. In Colossians chapter 3, Paul said, we serve Jesus Christ. In Galatians chapter 5, the apostle Paul said, we serve one another. This is the heart of being an active and faithful Christian. When we talk about being a Christian, what we're really talking about is what we just sang. Making me a servant unto God. I challenged us this morning in class, and I want to do it again. When we talk about making me a servant, you really need to be able to answer two questions. The first one was, who did I serve? And the second one is, what did I do? And we talked about this last week. And now you've had a whole week. And at the end of that week, those two questions have to pop up. And after our singing this song several times last week, and our preaching on it, and our studying on it, who did you serve this week? I'm not wanting you to answer out loud, but I want you to think. And what did you do? And it's evident that it's here all around us. The problem with being a servant, the problem with serving God in general, is simply bound up in one particular principle, and that is that all of our service to each other unto the Lord is all simply a matter of volunteering. In the army, they can sign you up against your better thoughts and judgments. In a business enterprise, they can come and they can tell you, I know you were going to take a vacation this week, but you're not. And what happens from that is, that's not really volunteer. Yeah, you can choose to go ahead and take your vacation and lose your job. I understand that. So, in one sense, you are choosing. But with the Lord, there is no coercion. With the Lord's work and with the church, you're going to do it. Or you don't. Jesus looked out over Jerusalem at the end of His life, facing the crucifixion. And you can almost hear the sorrow, the anguish. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. I would have gathered you together as a hen would gather her chicks, but you would not. It's not about ability. It's about will. It's not about opportunity. It again is about will. In order to fulfill what God wants with us, what we're really asking is the hardest thing for most of us to do. And that is simply, God wants you to be a self-starter. And brethren, this just isn't normal for us. We wait for the elders to ask. We wait for somebody to call. We wait until we simply stumble over the obstacle. And then, maybe. But what God is simply asking us to do is to be a self-starter. I'm going to challenge you this morning. I don't know what's going on this morning. I think food poisoning from Thanksgiving or something. But we have a lot of our people that are not here. At first I thought it was simply because they were hindered with all of the nasty winter weather we're having. And then I decided, well, that's probably not the excuse. But you know, it doesn't really matter what it is. It's something. And it is something that we simply can do. The second thing, that if we're going to be faithful in being servants to God, we're going to have to learn to be able to do this without comparisons. I would do more for God if only. I would do more for God if only I had a better job and a better income. Well, you don't. But you got 24 hours a day. I would do more for God if I only had more time. Well, we don't. I told the story in class this morning. I'm going to just quickly tell it again. When I showed up for a piano lesson and not practiced all week, and I told the piano teacher I didn't have time to practice. And she went out and told my mother what I had said and the fact that I had not practiced. And when I got in the car, my mother arranged my whole life for me. Actually, she didn't arrange my life. She just said, you're not going to do this or this or this or this until you practice. And what I found out is, I did have time. Because I made time. And when we talk about our service to God, we have to simply do it. But it's not a matter of, do I have more time than somebody else? It's about your time. It's not about abilities. It's about your abilities. When we take a look at the body, what we begin seeing is, I've become convinced that the work that gets done in the church is usually not done by the preacher. We try to center the congregation about the preacher. And what I've learned and seen in congregations is that which makes the congregation a lovable congregation and an active congregation and a working congregation is usually not about the preacher. It's about people. It's about us. It's about whether we do it or we don't do it. And if we're doing it comparing ourselves with each other or even with other congregations, we're going to miss the boat. Because it's not about that. It's simply about looking at needs and where we can find that. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Starting at verse 14. Well, actually, let's start at verse 12. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all of the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and were made to drink of one Spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? And if the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them as He chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. But on the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow great honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with great modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. That is an absolutely amazing passage. What is so amazing is, how in the world could an eye say to the hand? Now, you read right over that and you just accepted that. But if the whole body were an eye, that's what we would all look like. But the body is not the eye. Because the body does have a mouth. Because God has created us with a nose and with a hand and with a thumb and with feet and with a heart, with lungs, with kidney, and with the part that we never use. But you see, when we talk about the parts of the body, what we begin looking at and seeing in that there are some parts that are prominent. And nobody looks at the kidney. Nobody thinks about the kidney. We don't even talk about the kidney. But when it doesn't function, one of the saddest terms you usually hear is when a doctor comes out and says, well, their kidneys are shutting down. The eyes are fine. The mouth is doing well. The ears still work. The nose is still there. The hands and the fingers. But you see, what we've just said is the body is dying. Doesn't matter the rest of the parts working here, this part shutting down. And as we take a look at the church, and Paul made the analogy, he said that the body is us, and together we make up the body. And what he says concerning this body is that it takes all of these parts together. And then what you have is that which is absolutely phenomenal. A body. A living, active, human body. And that is one of the most phenomenal things in all of the whole universe. It is absolutely fascinating to watch a baby progress. To watch as they learn. And you can just see as they absorb what's going on in life. But what it is, it's the body. It's the whole of that little person that is growing and learning and feeling and seeing. And it takes all of that together. And when we then talk about the church as the body, Paul said, absolutely, there is one body. And we all belong to the same body. He said there were different gifts. And there were different ministries. There were different service. But it's the same Spirit and the same Lord and the same God. When he talked about the body, he said, though God had seen fit to give different gifts and different abilities unto the different parts of the body, that he specified that all of those gifts are for the common good, not for the individual part. I've watched over the years, it scares me to death because I've watched preachers. And many, many, many of them, they get an inflated ego. Many, many of them are just too important in their own mind. And it scares me. Because I realize how easy that is to fall into. But you know, it's not about me and it's not about you. It's not about the song leader and it's not about... We're here for the common good. and what abilities that you may or may not have. That we are to use those not for self, but for the common good. And once we begin to see ourselves in that capacity, that is service. You are serving others, whether it be the Lord or whether it be one of our members. But as you begin looking at that, Paul then affirmed something that to me is remarkable. That all of the parts are members of the same body. And that's why he said, the eye cannot say to the ear. And I'm still laughing about a talking eye. But going with that. Even if the eye said to the ear, I don't need you. And the ear said, I can't hear you. Because what happens is, it doesn't matter what the ear says back, without the ear, the eye cannot hear it. We do need each other. And we do need the lowliest of the members. And they are part of the body. Over the years, I have seen where certain people were simply discounted. We don't need them. One of the biggest mistakes churches make. We talk about the people that drift away and those that fall through the cracks, and that's the biggest mistake that we make as a church. Because what we have done is exactly what Paul said not to do. And we have said to that part, I don't need you. And we can't do that. Not if they are part of the Lord's body. And this is not mine, this is the Lord's body. And all of us are part of the same body. And what Paul said then was that all of the parts are needful. And did you catch this? None of them, not one of them, is indispensable. That's an attitude that we have to develop. That's an attitude that you have to develop. That as you look around about you, that part that is not functioning, that is having problems, whether it be spiritual problems that are not here or physical problems, they're not indispensable. We sing the song about the 90 and 9. And the Lord taught the exact same principle there. That though you have 99 that are safe in the fold, and surely 99 is more sheep than you can eat in a week. But the one that is lost is indispensable to its master. Enough to leave the 99 under protection and cared for and safe. And to go and look until he finds it's indispensable to him. And if we have the mind of Christ, then we have to have the same attitude. That the members are indispensable to us. And hence, none are without significance. And when you can't see the significance, it teaches you that you don't know what the Lord knows. That you're not seeing things the way God sees things. Because God has said, there is significance. One of my favorite stories was about the little boy. Tim Stevens told it the other month when he was with us. There had been a storm, and along the beach it had just blown in thousands of starfish. And they were stranded on the beach. And this little boy was walking by, and he'd pick one up and he'd throw it into the water, and he'd pick up another one and he'd throw it in the water. And this old man watched him. And for a half hour, this little kid just kept throwing all these starfish back out into the water. And there were thousands of them on the beach. And the old man walked up and he said, "Son, you're wasting your time. You can't make any difference doing this." And the little kid reached down and he picked up a starfish and he flung it out of the water and he said, "I made a difference to that one." Don't you like that? And when we get looking at the big problem and we shut down because we can't make a difference, I want you to think of that little kid. You can make a difference to that one. And what the Lord said through Paul, that there are none without significance. If you made a difference to that one, you made a difference. When Jesus told the parable of judgment in Matthew 25, "I was in prison and you visited me. I was sick and you visited me. I was naked and you clothed me. And with astonishment, the faithful servant said, 'When did we do that?' And Jesus said, 'When you did it to the least of my brethren, you did it to me.'" I've read that passage over and over and over again, but you know what? I don't usually emphasize the right word. When you did it to the least. That's the word. Because they're all indispensable to God. And hence, each one is important. And that's what we need to develop. So that people are missed. And they know they're missed. So we look around about us. And we begin giving honor, not to the preacher, not to the best song leader, but we begin honor unto the least. Have you ever stubbed your little toe? Amazing thing. You could cut that off. Well, but if you ever stub your toe, you're going to give undue honor to that. I have seen ladies show up in church with one dress shoe on because they were giving honor to that little toe on the other foot. They were not about to scrunch that little toe into those dress shoes. Why common sense doesn't tell us to not do it to the other one either, I don't know. But we give honor to it. And we protect it. And we will, well, that's what we ought to do. I don't know who the little toe is in the church. That's a wrong judgment to make. But what I know is, it doesn't matter. And we look for that which is there. And Paul said, the reason we need to do that is that there would be no division in the church. Because I'm going to tell you, most of the divisions that I've seen in the church are personalities. The exclusion of some, the preeminence of others. And as Paul said in 1 Corinthians, who made you to differ? What do you have that you did not receive? Why then do we make the distinctions that God made no distinctions for? So we have no exclusions. We don't leave out the little parts. We don't exclude from our care and concern those that for whatever reason we have decided are not there. But we give them honor. And in order to do this, I'm going to tell you, it takes commitment. It's a choice. Two times in the New Testament, the apostle warns, be not weary in well-doing. Because it's tiring work. It's never done. But it needs to be done. It requires long suffering and patience. It requires being put upon, inconvenience. It may even involve money. And if we are going to be servants, then we simply have to make that choice. Now I'm going to challenge you. Y'all either made that choice or you lied when you sang that song this morning. That's the way it is. Make me a servant. Do what you will do. So what he says is that we have to leave the outcome of all of this to God. One of the biggest problems with serving to me is this, is we begin looking for the direct results. And that's the wrong way to look. If you're still in Corinthians, turn back, if you will, to chapter 4. Starting at verse 1. This is how you should regard us. Now you gotta remember, these are the preachers. This is the apostle Paul and those men that were traveling with him that had gone and they had started the church at Corinth. It was because of them that these people were saved. And Paul said, how should you then regard us? And he says, as servants. Stewards of the mystery of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found trustworthy. But with me, it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself. I'm not aware of anything against myself, but I'm not thereby acquitted. It's the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes. He will bring to light the things that are now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. And then each one will receive his commendation from God. I've applied these things to myself and to Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us to not go beyond what is written, that none of you be puffed up in favor of one against the other. For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? If you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? Already you have what you want. Already you become rich. Without us, you become kings. And would that you did reign so that we might share the rule with you. For I think that God has exhibited us apostles last of all. Men sentenced to death because we've become a spectacle. When we talk about this, the Apostle Paul said in chapter 3 and verse 6, started verse 5. What then is Apollos? Or what is Paul? Servants. Wow. He said that twice in these chapters. That's what they are. And he says, if we are servants, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything. But only God who gives the growth. He who plants and he who waters are one. And each will receive wages according to his labor. We are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. How do we regard spiritual people? In verse 5, he repeated what he had said in verse 1, servants. And that's simply reiterating what Jesus said. The greatest among you are those that serve. So we're servants. Servants differ in assignment, just like the members of the body. Twice we've seen that now in this book. We don't all have the same part or function or ability or opportunities. And yet, we're all one. One body of people. But to be a servant is to do something. Servants serve. Plumbers plumb. Doctors doctorate. Servants serve. And when you're not doing anything, you're not a plumber. You're not a doctor. You're not a servant. Because you have to do it. And so what Paul said is, I watered and he planted and God gave the increase. And what that means is, that which we do is important. Because it's important to God. And hence we have the song, Make Me a Servant. You control that. God wants to. And God will open the doors. And let me tell you, there's more than enough opportunity to serve. But can God use you? That means you must submit unto God. You must look around. You must be faithful. You must take of your time. You must serve God. If you've never become a Christian, that's where you start. But I want you to know what we read in 1 Thessalonians 1. You turn to God to serve the living and the true God. We're inviting you this morning to become a servant of Jesus Christ. And then to go into the world and to serve by serving people. If you're willing to do that. Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized can be saved. Submit unto Jesus, not only in baptism, but in your life as serving Him. We invite you to come as together we stand and sing.